You're listening to Wheelationships.
It's 2012. This is almost last week. I kind of gave you a beginning of the year kind of thing on relationships. This is another one. So we're still beginning the year. Hey, quick impression. Mayan calendar creator. Mayan. Anybody got a pen? Yeah. Anyway, you have to think about that one. I worked on that all last year. Look at this very well-known and often quoted verse and tell me what's missing. John 10:10. It's in your notes. The thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Notice anything missing in that verse? Well, I looked at it, and I looked at it for a while, and I noticed there's a big gap. There's a big gap between steal, kill, and destroy and rich, satisfying life. Right? I mean, don't you feel like sometimes you're somewhere in the middle there? Okay, it's not really all that rich and satisfying. You're not being stolen from or killed or destroyed necessarily, but you may not necessarily in your relationships, whether it's friends or spouses or parents or children, not really as rich and satisfying as maybe it should be. I think a lot of people live somewhere between the two. And I think a lot of times living somewhere between the two many times puts you closer to the first than the second. I think if the enemy can steal just a little bit, destroy just a little bit, kill just a little bit, then it keeps us from what his purpose, God's purpose really is. God's purpose is that we have a rich and satisfying life. And I think that means rich and satisfying relationships. There's a recent song, Switchfoot, anybody? That puts it like this. I want to thrive, not just survive. I want to thrive, not just survive. I mean, is anybody your goal? There used to be a commercial, a couple of them, where, you know, the little kids say, I want to grow up to be a, you know, and it was kind of a low goal. It wasn't like they wanted to grow up to be an astronaut or a doctor. I want to grow up to be mediocre, you know. We don't aim for that, I hope, in relationships. I want a really mediocre relationship. I want to just get by. I hope that I can just, it's like the old prayer request, you know, Lord, just help me to hold out to the end. No, we want to thrive. We want relationships that are really, really good, rich and satisfying. I don't think that means, and I hope you don't think that means, that God's purpose is that he lines up all our circumstances in our favor. Because I don't think that's what that means. He says, my purpose is to give you a rich and satisfying life. I don't think that means his purpose is so that every circumstance lines up in your favor, in my favor, and it's just all woohoo, yay. I don't think it's God's purpose for us to avoid trouble or difficulty. When I look for a biblical example of people that had rich and satisfying lives, I end up in Macedonia. The scripture you have right there. 2 Corinthians. Now I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what God in his kindness has done through the churches in Macedonia. They are being tested by many troubles and they are very poor. Woohoo! But they are also filled with abundant joy, which has overflowed in rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more. And they did it of their own free will. They begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing in the gift for the believers in Jerusalem. They even did more than we had hoped, for their very first action was to give themselves to the Lord and to us, just as God wanted them to do. Now, you're going to hear a lot about giving this morning. This is not about giving, and it's not even about your heart. It's about having a rich and satisfying life. And you look at the Macedonians, a lot of troubles, very poor, didn't have nothing, but they were full of joy, abundant joy. They were full of rich generosity. These were the kind of people that Paul would write another church about. Let me tell you about these people. This is awesome. These people are just the best. They not only wanted to give, verse 4, they begged us, please let us be a part of this. Wouldn't that be great if people came in and said, please let me give in the offering. Please. It'd be awesome. The Christ followers in Macedonia were living rich and satisfying lives, even though they were being, what does it say, tested by many troubles. So the question is, as I was thinking about all this, when there are difficulties, when you're having circumstances that are not in your favor, do you respond in a manner that promotes growth, that promotes harmony? Do you and I see difficulties, especially in relationships? I'm going to try to keep it on relationships this morning. When you're having an issue with somebody, do you see it as an opportunity to be good and trustworthy and kind and fair and generous, even when the circumstances are hard? Because I think when you have you met people like that, that even when, and maybe you are that person, that's great, okay? When things are, all the circumstances line up, you're not flipping out, but you're looking for opportunity. Okay, this is an opportunity to be fair. This is an opportunity to be generous. This is an opportunity to do good. This is an opportunity when somebody's coming against me and they're doing all kinds of, as Jesus was talking about, they're doing all sorts of evil manner against you. Instead, you bless them. You're looking for an opportunity that way. I think that type of person is an overcomer. It's what we would call an overcomer. They're overcoming the circumstances that would try to steal, kill, and destroy from them. They're overcoming those circumstances and instead living a rich and satisfying life. It's a mindset of someone who experiences freedom. It's a mindset of someone that attracts. It's a mindset that I really want to have. It's a mindset that many times I don't. And instead, when difficulty comes, I'm going, stinking, rotten person. I don't want to talk to them anymore. Jerk. Okay. That's not an overcoming mindset right there. That's not a mindset that attracts. Now, here's the thing. I want to talk the filter of the mind. Let's talk about the filter of the mind. Our minds have a filter on it. Because many times when we picture what happens, we picture circumstances, the way we picture the world is like this. We picture that events happen. Circumstances happen. Things happen. And when they happen, we get emotions. Emotions come out of it. Somebody cuts you off in traffic. Emotions. Somebody says something mean about you. Emotions. Somebody doesn't do something you wanted them to do. Emotions. And out of those emotions, we have a response. Right? Pretty simple. Things happen. We have emotions. We respond to it. What really happens? We have events, emotions, and response. But in between the events and the emotions, I'm waiting to see if it'll go. We have a filter. We have a filter through which our mind is taking these events and interpreting them. Okay. How many of you, your team won their bowl game? How many? Bob, you may want to just sit with the ladies since since they didn't play in a bowl game. It's okay. If you were watching the game, if you were watching a game with somebody that's rooting for the opposite team, you're seeing the same event. You're getting completely different emotions. Why? Because you're rooting for different teams. Okay? They score the touchdown, and you're going, yoo-hoo! And the other guy's going, And then they, you know, you throw an interception. They're like, oh, yay! And you get out of my house. Okay. It's because we have that filter. What is that filter? That filter is attitudes, priorities, biases, prior experiences, needs, desires, expectations. All these things that filter the events that's coming in. So depending on your expectations, depending on your desires, depending on your priorities, your attitudes, all of those things are filtering, and you're getting a different emotional bent out of what you've experienced. Let me just say, when you think about that, though, logic and reason may figure into that filter, but many times it doesn't. Many times, logic and reason have nothing to do with that filter. And in fact, if the filter is really strong, it may even reject reason and logic. Ever had one of those, I know it's not, but I think it is, moments of fear? Well, I know it can't be this, but maybe it is. I don't know. You know. Logically, we know it's not, but our filter is saying, well, maybe it is. And so we have these moments of fear. Or have you ever had I know I shouldn't, but I feel like I should, moment of anger? I know I shouldn't give them a piece of my mind, but I really think I will. I know it's a bad idea. Logic and reason would say no. And because our filter is so strong, it's not our emotion that's so strong, it's our filter that's so strong. It's our filter that says, look, I really need this. I really desire this. I really want this. I really have this expectation. I really have all this thing that, right? Okay, you with me? Understand? So if you examine, it's the filter of a mind and a heart that set us up for success or failure when circumstances happen. Most people can handle life when circumstances are perfect. Now, you may know somebody that can't. No matter what happens, nothing's, it could be absolutely a perfect day and it's just, they're Eeyore, you know. But most of us can handle, when life's perfect, I mean, okay, it's great. But, it's the old thing, is the glass empty or half full? And you have some people that it's half empty and some of it's half full. And you wonder, what is it with these half full people? What is it with the people that even when the glass is almost empty, they're still seeing abundance and they're still filtering things and they're seeing events and they're still positive and they're still joyful and they're still people you want to be around even when things are going bad for them? That's the kind of mindset I'm talking about. That's the kind of person that's thriving. That's the kind of person that's not just illogically optimistic. They are joyful, like godly joyful. What is that? What's up with that? Okay. If you examine these kind of people, you discover that the filter of their mind is calibrated a certain way. And their attitudes and their priorities and their biases and their expectations and their all that is shaped by certain attitudes. I say this like we're not this way, and I'm just talking about me. You may be this way. In fact, I think a few of you are this way, that are, you're positive people, and we like to be around you. But maybe you'll recognize your attitude in this. If not, then these are the kind of attitudes I think we ought to go for. So the kind of attitudes that help us thrive are this. Number one, I can get better. I can get better. People that thrive, people that their filter is set for positivity, I think, godly positivity, say, I can get better. We can all get stuck emotionally. Remember the crazy cycle? Some of you remember way back when we talked about the crazy cycle? Crazy cycle is he wants respect, she wants love. And so if you don't get what you want, then you can get on that crazy cycle well, she doesn't respect me, so I'm not going to love her, and he doesn't love me, so I'm not going to respect him. And it starts going around, and you get on this, woohoo. We can get stuck there. She wants love. He wants respect. We might spin on the crazy cycle. You may spin on some sort of angry cycle or a scared cycle or some other negative emotional cycle where you get stuck, where you're waiting for something to happen to get you out of that, but it's just going around and around, and it's feel like I can't get any, this is not getting better. I'd like not to feel this way, but I just feel this way because it keeps, you know, we're spinning here. And what's happening is we stay stuck when we remain reactionary rather than intentional. Now, let me explain that. The reactionary mind says, well, if you act the way I want, then I'll be okay. I'll be emotionally stable. I can get out of this cycle if you just do what I want. That's reactionary. I'm waiting to react to what you do. Well, you're not doing it, so we're going to keep spinning until you do something different. It must be you. If you treat me badly, then I'm going to be obliged to let my emotions run their course. Okay? We're just going to keep here until you do it my way because I'm reacting to this. But here's the thing. Yeah, you'll like this. Okay, you won't like this. Every response is a choice. Every response is a result of choice. Yeah. Okay, look, if that's not true, and I want you to think about this because some of you may have just automatically rejected that. No, my responses are not a choice. I have the emotion. I mean, it's like, boom, it's there. I don't even think about it. It's just, boom, something happens and I blow up and I fly out. So if that's true and it's not a result of choice, but it's just something that happens, then, okay, stay stuck. You're going to stay stuck and you're never going to get any better. And you're going to be crazy and irrational and emotional forever. Okay, but that's not true. Every response is a result of choice. So the progression you had on your sheet actually looks like this. You have events which are filtered, which lead to emotion, which lead to response. Actually, you have this. You have events which are filtered, which lead to emotion, and you have choices. And you choose what to do with those emotions. Because every response is a choice. Self-control is always an option. Lack of self-control is always an option. Proverbs, fools vent their anger, but the wise quietly hold it back. It's not that the filter took out all the anger. There was still anger, but the wise people respond by choosing to hold it back. Proverbs 16:32, better to be patient. How many love patience? Wow, what's wrong with you? Or do you just like it in other people? I do. I like it in other people. Sometimes not so much in me. Better to be patient than powerful. Better to have self-control than to conquer a city. Again, you're choosing that. Now see, I was thinking through this, and I could hear, and maybe it was just me responding to this, but I could hear people saying, okay, well, yeah, but it happens so quick. How do you choose? How do you choose that? Thinking and planning and preparation are always going to help us react better. And that's what you have to do. That's what we have to do, is we have to think, we have to plan, we have to prepare. You say, well, I didn't know that was going to happen. But you knew that things like that do happen. You know that people sometimes aren't fair. You know that people sometimes do stupid things. Yeah. Absolutely. That's part of our preparation.
I mean, sometimes I didn't feel surprised that something really nice came out of my mouth.
Yeah. And that's part of preparation. That's part of planning, to say, Lord, whatever happens, I want to put myself in a place that the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart are acceptable in your sight. Rehearsal, practice, necessary. Think about it this way. And if you're still having trouble with this, you're like, but I just, it happens. No, think about it this way. Okay, you come to church. We're here in church. Church. Holy. Oh. And somebody, you have an interaction with somebody that is less than pleasant. But you're in church. There are people around. There are church people around. And so your response, maybe internally, is, I'd like to knock your head off. But externally, you're in church. And so you say,
sorry.
No, I just didn't hear what you said. Ah, yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. See, emotionally, you may want to act a certain way. You may want to give that person a piece of your mind, but you're not because you're in church. Then you go home. And you have a similar interaction with someone at home. And you don't act the way you did at church. You just let it rip. You let it go. You say, well, I don't need to step outside now. But you may want to.
But if you can't do it at church, you can't do it.
Yeah, well, if you can't do it at church, or you have, or if you're not doing it anywhere, then you're failing everywhere. But if you're doing it at church and you're not doing it at home, what is that? Were you faking it at church and the real you came out at home? Maybe. Or, he said it's filtering, or maybe it's simply that your plans for church and your plans for home are different. You've made a choice that I'm not going to act that way when I'm around certain people. And it could be, like I said, it could be anger, it could be, you know, I'm not going to be one of the party boys at church, you know. But when I get with my friends, you know, we're going to talk a certain way and do a certain thing. Why? It's because you have different plans. You're making different choices. It's not just that you can't. It's that you won't. Maybe it's simply that you've trained yourself to have self-control at church, but your mental preparations for home are different. So what if the plan was to use moments of conflicts as opportunities to expand your positive influence? What if the plan was to use moments of conflict as an opportunity to be a leader? What if your plan was that moments of conflict are a time where I can show growth and maturity? What if the plan was that I can use times where I feel that coming to be a positive example and a reflection of Jesus Christ in me? What if the plan was that I was going to live a rich and satisfying life? This quote, most growth in relationship is not found at a time of peace, but in the midst of conflict. It's not that we look forward to conflict. It's just that we don't dread it. Because whether there's conflict or not, we're able to experience and to participate in what God is doing in our life. Colossians 4 says, live wisely among those who are not believers and make the most of every opportunity. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for everyone, not just the people you want to impress. Just live wisely among those who are not believers, among the people that may be being really to you. Secondly, Second attitude of somebody who's thriving is, I am not you. I am not you. Some of you may be taking that differently. Yeah, think about it. As we said, part of staying stuck is not only because we're dependent on our own emotions, and we're thinking I can't make choices when we can, but we remain dependent on the emotions of others and the emotional response of others. We're having tension between us, so therefore I have to stay emotionally troubled and internally tense and until your emotion changes, then I have to stay all bound up and gripped by your emotion. And those that thrive embrace a different reality. Your tension is not my tension. If we have a problem between us, then yes, we should address it. Yes, I should do what I can and make sure that I am not at fault here. I am not causing that tension in you. But if you have that tension, that's your tension. However, I can make life-giving, mature, generous, kind choices, even if you don't. Even if you stay like that and you want to be whatever, I can still live a rich and satisfying life. This goes, remember boundaries, good fences? Does that ring a bell with anybody? Okay. That's your, I'm sorry that you feel that way. And there will be a part of me that wishes you wouldn't be that way, but I'm not you. Okay? True story. I'll read you a true story. Megan was born out of wedlock to a disadvantaged teenager and adopted by a couple in their late 30s who were unable to have children. Before her 6th birthday, her adoptive mother died of cancer. The father was not a sensitive person, alternating between sullenness and irritability. He eventually remarried, and her stepmother clearly did not want to take the nurturing role upon herself. Megan's teen years were lonely. She struggled to have any kind of social life. Not surprisingly, she married the first person available shortly after high school and ended in divorce by the time she was in her early 20s. Megan explained, "It was at that point that I realized I was my own separate person. Literally from day one in my life, I'd been exposed to people who didn't know how to manage my needs, so I had to pay the price. I recognized, though, that my life did not have to be determined by the things that happened to me. I realized that I'm my own separate person with my own unique skills and options every step of the way. I had always admired people who were upbeat and seemed to know where they were going, and I decided there was no reason for me not to be one of those types of people." I am not you. Look at what Paul had to say about disagreeing people in Philippi. Now, you may have never put this together, but look at this. "Now, I appeal to you, Euodia and Syntyche, please," I didn't make the names up, "please, because you belong to the Lord, settle to your disagreement. And I ask you, my true partner, to help these two women, for they worked hard with me in telling others the good news. They worked along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are written in the book of life. Always be full of joy in the Lord. I say it again, rejoice. Let everyone see that you are considerate in all you do. Remember, the Lord is coming soon." We separate those verses, and they're not separate. He was writing the same person, saying the same thing. He's telling he has an unnamed partner here. Some people says his name was Syzygus, and I didn't make that name up either. He's telling it, look there in verse 3, "I ask you, my true partner." He's talking to this friend of his, and he says, "I'm asking you, would you please step in? You're mature. You're able to handle things. Would you please step in and help them sort this out? And don't be disagreeable yourself. Be joyful and considerate, because you are not them." Cooperation in relationships is desirable. We would like cooperation. But it's not essential for us to make wise, mature, life-giving choices. My mind is mine. It's not anybody else's. except God's. And if my mind belongs to Him, then I'm not going to be stuck. Thirdly, my past is not my future. You can change what lies in the future. You can't do anything about what happened in the past. A big part of the crazy cycle of any of those cycles is continuing to react to the past, to responding what's already happened. We tie ourselves to the past, and we don't move forward. They acted this way, so I'm going to respond that way. But those who thrive move forward with the mindset that the future can be totally different than the past. If it can't, then why would I move forward? But I'm going to move forward because it can be different. And if it can be different, what adjustments can I make? My future can be totally different, so maybe I need to make some adjustments. What can I positively contribute in the middle of adversity? If you catch yourself saying, well, okay, I'll act like a Christian, but it won't change anything. You know, I'll address it, but it won't change anything. Then you're stuck. You won't move forward. You always have the option to go back and retreat and go back into your bad behavior and be a jerk again. You can always do that. You always have the option to be afraid. You always have the option to be angry. You always have the option, but we also have the option to change, to do it differently. Again, we have this interaction between Paul and Timothy. Again, I say, don't get involved in foolish, ignorant arguments that only start fights. A servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but must be kind to everyone, be able to teach and be patient with difficult people, gently instruct those who oppose the truth. Perhaps God will change those people's hearts and they will learn from the truth. Then they will come to their senses and escape from the devil's trap, for they have been held captive by him to do whatever he wants. Well, they won't change. Paul says, well, perhaps they will. Who knows? But you can still make wise choices. Last thing is, I can remain committed to good. So let's just say I decide to handle things differently. I decide to act in mature, God-honoring ways. I decide to change and thrive rather than just survive. But the conflict, the negative emotions, the choices of others, what they're doing, nothing changes. What then? What happens when the circumstances don't change? What happens if they don't change? They get worse. Remain committed to the plan. Remain committed to good. See, we all want, think about what you want. Think about what I want in relationships. We all want to be accepted. We want to be loved. We want to be understood. We want to be forgiven. We want to be respected. We want others to give those things to us. And we can remain stuck and say, well, if I give those things, I'll get them back. No, not always. But that's the thing. We don't have any control of that. We don't have any control of getting those things. We have control of giving those things. What we do have control is whether or not we give respect and forgiveness and understanding and acceptance and love to others. If we do, we will thrive. We will be the kind of person that attracts. James says, dear brothers and sisters, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy, for you know when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow, for when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing. Rich and satisfying life, thriving. Let's pray. God, we thank you for your word. Lord, we want to be people that thrive in relationships, that thrive in a relationship with you that is rich and satisfying, that thrive with others. Lord, that even when it's difficult, even when things don't go our way, that we can remain committed to your good, your purpose in our life. Your purpose is that we have rich and satisfying lives. So, Lord, help us, remind us, every day, today, when given the opportunity. Lord, help us to reflect you and what you're doing in our hearts and our minds. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Have a good week. We'll see you next time.